I look a lot older, Ian. The bags under my eyes. Looking fresh.
You look fresh.
Welcome, everyone.
You look great, Patrick.
Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
To this completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. We're officially in spring, and I'm officially 1 year older. One more spin around the sun alongside Ian Ferguson.
What's up?
I'm Pat Country. On the show today, we'll be talking about...
It's my new tagline. Hey, what's going on?
Put on a t-shirt.
Hey, what's up?
Game Builder Garage. Pat buys a graded game by accident. What? Portable Dreamcast for sale. Talk about that in the intro. And we'll do a fucking Patreon poll topic, and we'll do voice message stuff.
I just want everyone to know that we're really trying this week. We're really trying to pull it together. Trying to make a soup out of the leftovers.
Why do you keep saying every week, Ian? We're professionals.
We are professionals.
They wouldn't know that we're pulling this out.
They're going to know.
Too.
They're going to know this is a dry week.
No, Ian, you got too much of that imposter syndrome. we're confident that this is going to be an entertaining podcast. What did you do this weekend, Ian, before I get into my fun-filled week?
Did my taxes.
Over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean Monday. And the weekend, as we've decided, is everything from Wednesday to Monday.
At least Thursday. Thursday to Monday, yes.
I did my taxes. That was that. Real good time doing the taxes.
The tax man.
I also went out and got breakfast for the first time in over a year yesterday. That was fantastic.
You going to a place nice, like Banana Republic?
No.
I mean, Breakfast Republic, not Banana Republic. Get some nice shirts at Banana Republic.
No, I went to Old Town House, which is where I...
Oh, yeah. The
first place I figured
proud
I'd
sponsors
go.
Sponsors of the NES Marathon.
That's right.
Proud food sponsors.
Just throw containers that, full of eggs.
That Sunday morning when Pat's barely awake and Ian is on a second high of something, when we dive into those breakfast burrito leftovers.
That's right.
Because we get them on Saturday morning. That's right.
Yeah, they do a good breakfast burrito too. But yeah, fantastic. It was strange just sitting there and hearing people chatter and hear like the clank of dishes. It was just a very alien sort of thing. But
it was that alien, really?
It was weird. It was definitely strange doing it again. Other than that, though, no, my weekend was really uneventful.
Oh.
What about yours? I heard someone might have had a birthday.
I had a birthday. So, first of all, I got the second vax shot on Friday, and it was like there was less people. I was kind of alarmed thinking, oh, is there less interest? But I was saying, no, I think it's just a lot of people have gotten it in a few weeks in between. But, like, I got the shot within, like, 3.5 minutes of parking, 4 minutes, just strolled on in. There was, like, 10 people in front of me. Less stations. Shoulder's still sore from Friday. It's a little bit. So the shoulder was, it was interesting. The shoulder was not as painful overall, maximum pain, but it's lasted a little bit. Ian, you prepped me to be like miserable the next day partially. You're like, 3 a.m. after my shot, I started feeling better. So I was getting up middle of the night. I was like, no, it never really hit me on the Saturday.
I wasn't miserable, but I was just saying that up to 24 hours later is when you can feel them.
I just
up to
felt,
48 hours.
Well, I felt the next day like I'd gone through like a fucking war. Like I just felt like I ran a marathon. Like my muscles were aching more than usual. I work out on Fridays, like legs and shoulder stuff. So like it exacerbated all that pain. And I just felt like a little off. Like a little bit. Like slightly, almost like a feeling of like dehydration. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been dehydrated.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much how I felt.
But I was totally above my wits. I wasn't feeling sick or nauseous. I was like, okay, this is not bad. It's not bad. And so I went over, Frank made some meat sauce.
Delicious.
On Sunday. At first he's like, yeah, I want sushi. I'm like, well, that's great, Frank. It's not your birthday.
But he said,
no, I'll make meat sauce. I'll get some revs. And so we did that. And I brought over the Carvel ice cream cake. I buy myself a Carvel ice cream cake every year.
What kind did you get?
There's only the one you can get in your local freezer section. It's the white white cake with vanilla icing, vanilla ice cream with the crunchies and chocolate. It's both. That's the only thing they make, unless you get like a Fudgy the Whale.
I was gonna say Fudgy the Whale, or
but you can't get those. There's only one place down in the border that's Carvel
on
the whole county. We don't have a local Carvel.
That's right, we don't.
We have a Baskin Robbins.
Have I ever told you what Cookie Puss's name used to be?
I don't think you did.
Celestial Person.
Really?
Yep.
It was a god.
CP, he was an alien. It was Celestial Person, and then they changed it to Cookie Puss. And here's my favorite fun fact. This makes me laugh every time.
Carvel lore.
This makes me laugh every time. Every St. Patrick's Day, they do a special cake. They do Cookie Puss, but it's Cookie-O-Puss.
Yes, now I do it. I did do that.
it's a cookie puss, but it's green.
Yeah, there's also one for Halloween, I believe, too. There's different colored ones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All the commercials from the 70s, 80s are online. Frank told me that as a kid, they used to make fun of Mr. Carvel's voice. They used to make fun of his voice. Because he was the Mr. Guy, original guy. I think he died like late 80s, early 90s. God bless you, Mr. Carvel, for creating you and Friendly's neck and neck for the most creative ice cream creations. But I think Carvel puts it over the top with their ice cream cake.
Mr. Carvel.
And the flying saucer. I mean, I knew Carvel doing that the first, and then everyone else got their own ripoff of the flying saucer after that.
That's the cookie sandwich?
Cookie sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, it's a wafer.
Yeah.
But like when you were a kid, see, if you grew up in an Italian-American family, they like the adults like shitty-ass rum cake so
I
much.
I love rum cake.
Not when you're seven. So
sure. That's fair.
So they wouldn't get – they usually this would be on like holidays. They wouldn't even get a regular cake, a chocolate cake for the kids. They would just get the fucking, 12 pack of the flying saucer. We loved it though, but like, I used to always try rum cake when I was a kid. Never got into it. I probably would like it better today as an adult. Probably
it's one of my favorites. But yeah, but, I mean,
yeah, that's a really Ginzan dessert. The rum cake at the events here. Sorry. So I found out who I shared a birthday with. I always knew I shared a birthday with the lovely Rosario Dawson. She's a year older. We're destined. But I know Kermit shares my birthday.
Nice.
Kermit, abolitionist John Brown, Billy Joel. I did know that. So yeah, I got a nice little, very eclectic group of people I share. But that's it. May 9th is a barren birthday day. I was looking it up. I was like, that's really it. There's not really, we're a bunch of weirdos, I guess, on May 9th. Not a lot of famous people on May 9th. I was just kind of surprised about that.
Share a birthday with John Brown.
Yeah.
That's neat.
I could share an attitude. I'd take a sword to some people and try to.
I read a good biography of him years ago.
Because it's the first time I saw it trending on May 9th for his birthday because he was born in 1800. And people were like, oh, I never learned about him in school. We learned about him. I learned about John Brown.
He's awesome. No, yeah. Everyone should read about John Brown.
Yeah, people thought, he's a little nutty, but, he was going to try to do a whole slave rebellion in the South. That was never going to happen, but, He was a very complicated man, from what the stories are.
Yes,
but you got to be in order to do that. Like, treat his family like shit. But he didn't like slavery, which is a good belief to have.
Yeah,
we're all complicated.
We are all complicated people.
Probably whipped his sons, but like he didn't want to see other people getting whipped. That's probably what happened.
Probably
one of those sort of types. It's one of those fire and brimstone probably type of people, like mm-hmm. in the personal stuff.
Yes.
And those are not people that, you want to be around, personally. But, yeah. Yeah. Read about John Brown if you haven't. Sorry. So, the Venom Let There Be Carnage trailer came out. And the reason we have to discuss is that we discussed the first Venom trailer and the symbiote. Remember the symbiotes?
And the oats.
And that's where the Quaker Oats fear came out. Ian has is afraid of the Quaker Oats guy.
So I made oatmeal cookies a couple weeks ago, and Vani was at the grocery store, and she had to buy some oatmeal. And she was like, do you want the oats man or do you want the not oats man? And I was like, the not oats man, please.
I would have loved to try a cookie, Ian.
I needed to perfect them. That's the only reason you didn't get them. Mm-hmm. They were a little underbaked.
Mm-hmm. You can, if you underbake oatmeal cookies, it's just like oatmeal then.
So I was making Lace cookies, which are a lot of brown sugar and butter, and they're delicious.
Brown sugar,
but you want them to. I didn't cook them crisp enough. The whole thing is they're supposed to be very thin, and they're supposed to like snap.
You know what were deadly? Well, everything Little Debbie did was the Little Debbie fucking oatmeal sandwiches that love were them. Just cream in the middle. And it was like eating two cookies at once with a cream filling.
They're fantastic.
My mouth is watering.
They had oatmeal in the title, so people are like, they're probably healthier.
It's healthy. It's 1,000 calories in one. They're healthy.
Oatmeal cream pies were one of my absolute favorite snacks growing up. Just the fucking most delicious.
God, Little Debbie, your reason why I still have baby fat. So Venom Let There Be Carnage is number one trending. Trailer came out yesterday on the 10th. It's a sequel to Venom, which came out, 19 or 18? And I warned people not to see this stupid movie.
Came out in 1918?
I said 19 or 18.
Yes, I know, Patrick.
Not during World War I in the trenches. So this comes out. The only thing I'm going to say about this is that I didn't see the first movie. I don't want to see the first movie. I don't want to see, Venom without Spider-Man is like, what's the point? But this looks like this trailer, I'm not... going for a hyperbole, I don't know if Ian saw it. This is looks like a parody of what a Venom movie would be. It's like wisecracking Venom, the symbiote's helping him make eggs and waffles for breakfast.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Did you see the trailer?
Yeah, it looks, it's ridiculous. Yeah, that whole breakfast scene is just fucking bizarre.
That's not from the source material, this stuff. That's not how he was. I don't know if they changed him to be like that goofy, but he was. He was always an anti-hero. He was always still crazy, even when he was doing good.
Well, at the end of the trailer, he threatens to eat the lady at the...
At the convenience store.
Who doesn't have the chocolate, yes.
So, like, that's the... This is awful. I'm sorry. The Spider-Verse Sony thing is awful. And because you out there saw the first Venom movie, we're not always get a shitty sequel. We're going to get a fucking awful Morbius movie that no one's going to like or watch, probably. With what's his name that's, pretending he's a vampire while he's filming it. Method acting. Jared Leto. Because he has to method act as the... Fuck you. Just do your job. You're acting as a character. Ridiculous. Sorry.
He is kind of ridiculous.
Sending Will Smith, use condoms. Will Smith would have fucking beat the shit out of him on the Suicide Squad set. Are you kidding me? Hear about that shit he did?
I did, yes.
Fuck you, Jared Leto. I'll tell that if I see you. It's ridiculous. Sorry. Go on.
Some sort of Suicide Squad.
I'm canceled now because I don't like Jared Leto. Go on.
This looks bad, but Woody Harrelson looks like he'd be amusing.
Woody Harrelson's like one of those actors that...
He's always amusing.
He's always really good. But you don't go, you don't like ever say, I'm going to watch that because of Woody Harrelson. When you see him in something, you're like, he's really good.
I might.
They got rid of his clown. They got rid of his clown hair, though. Remember the wig in the first one? You see he had like a clown hair wig?
No, I've never seen the first one. I will maybe at some point in the comfort of my own couch. And maybe I would watch this on my couch. I did not know Woody Harrelson was in the first one, too.
Yeah, just for the tag. They gave him the crazy, when he first showed up, Cletus Cassidy. It amazes Spider-Man 344 or 360. 361 was the first full appearance.
Cletus Cassidy.
344 was a cameo. Where I know this shit. I think it's 344. He had he had curly wild hair, so they threw a wig on him like a Ronald McDonald wig in the first one. It was ridiculous. Woody Harrelson though always looks a lot younger. He's like the one white guy where you're like, wow, he's aged very well.
He doesn't age.
It's that hemp lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, he does not.
You see the first season of True Detective, which is amazing.
No,
with him McConaughey.
I need to, but
so,
I have not.
In True Detective, there's a lot of flashbacks and modern day. So in modern day, Woody Harrelson is just like, well, he looks older because they put a little...
You're 59 years old.
I was going to say 60.
59 years young.
He looks like he's 45. So in True Detective, which is now, what, like 6 years old the first season? Amazing the first season. They do flashbacks to like 15 years before. And the only thing they do is like give him more hair, but he looks younger, which is with more hair. You're like, oh yeah, he looks a lot younger with more hair. Or like they like played up his paunch, things like that. That's it. I'm like, wow, yeah, he looks really good. It's that nice lifestyle of playing the bongos and the hemp stuff and, a little CBD, a little the marijuana. Yeah. I like Woody Harrelson. He doesn't act enough and stuff. He was great in Ill Country for Old Men.
Didn't see that either.
You ever saw...
I don't watch movies.
What?
You never saw that?
Yeah, no.
Seriously?
What's that what from?
I don't know. What's that from?
I don't know.
Oh.
What?
You have no idea what that's from?
No.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Moving on.
All right.
Metroid Prime Switch ports tricky? People were reacting to one of the original Metroid Prime Retro Studios devs. Saying that it would be difficult, this is on like a forum, it would be difficult to do a Switch port. And then he was harassed online due to skeptical views. I don't know if this is something lost in translation about this, but it was a Facebook post. That's a great place always for conversation. That's always even keeled and sourced out. And Metroid.
The
fans,
only place better would be a YouTube comments section.
I think that might be better than Facebook, actually, at this point in time. Responding to a comment on a Facebook post by Metroid fan site Shinesparkers, Michael Wieken, the former lead designer on all three Prime titles, discussed how he believes a Metroid Prime trilogy port on Nintendo Switch, port happening on Nintendo Switch, is very unlikely. It would take a lot of effort, so I'm skeptical it will happen, he says. It was straightforward to update MP1 and 2 to motion controls, but converting MP3 to normal controls would be a Herculean effort, as it is scripted very specifically using volumetric triggers to detect the motion in precise manners to do specific switches, and the bosses are tuned to take into account the ease of gestural aiming. I never heard of that term. So people went nuts. They're like, what are you talking about? The post was removed because people went off on them. He also said the biggest issue is Retro no longer has functional editor tools to work with the Prime code base. So everything has to be brute force hard coded. So it wouldn't be just simple, just, okay, we're going to import into fucking Unity.
Right. So it's a two-part thing. There's one and two might not be so hard to translate to the Switch, but they don't have the tools to really access it and do the port. And then on top of that, he feels that three would just be too hard to remove from the context of motion controls. The difficulty tuning.
There's motion controls on the Switch, but I get it.
They're very different. I mean, they're not IR.
It would be a pain in the ass. Yeah. It sounds like.
So he doesn't think it'll be done. It's not that he said it can't be, because he says it doesn't think it will be. I'm also assuming that Retro is a fairly small studio in that they probably don't have all the manpower to work on part four and a brand new port of the trilogy.
Sure.
But as this article points out, there have been games on the that have been ported to the Switch, notably Mario Galaxy, and we haven't seen Skyward Sword yet, but it's coming. Skyward Sword especially was heavily reliant on motion controls, and they found a way to port it. So it really just depends, I think, on how badly, you know, it comes down to how badly Nintendo would want to do it, and my guess is Nintendo's not going to want to do it that badly.
They'll wait till the 35th anniversary? No, this year is 86 Metroid. That's right. It is the 35th. There's too many things happening around 86. You know, 85, 86. There's too many big games. You need some more time in between. This is what I'm going to say about people that, of course, are idiots and going after a guy for posting something. It's like, I would trust the guy who made the games more than you, random ass Facebook user. I'll trust the guy who spent years of his life making the games you love. And I mean, like, they're babies. They are. They're babies.
Shut up, you fucks.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, I don't know about this. What do you know? I think I know about games because I read blog posts and, you know, it's like, ridiculous. That's all. I think it's interesting, though, that, you know, they did the re-release. Was it the Wii? They did the trilogy thing on the Wii?
Yeah.
The little steel case set.
Yeah, the steel book one is. It's a nice one.
This is so ridiculous. I'm sorry. I had the Venom trailer open again, making fucking breakfast. It's like the first 30 seconds of the trailer.
It's dumb.
It's ridiculous. Sorry. Moving on. Closing that. You want to talk about Sega being cool with fan games?
Yeah. So Sega is cool with fan games.
All right. Okay. Next.
Onward. we're moving on. So Sega just, Sega said yesterday they're cool with fan games as long as no profits are involved. The value. This is kind of just a continuation of how they've always felt. Notably, Sonic Mania started as a fan game by Christian Whitehead, and that's where they kind of noticed him. He worked on fan games, and he ported Sonic CD to mobile devices, and then they grabbed him and had him make Sonic Mania. So it's nice to see Sega not care about this when Nintendo is constantly shutting down fan games. I understand being a fan. I still think it's better to just take all that passion that you have for this game that you're making and make your own original property. Do your own thing.
Wouldn't get noticed as well. That's the thing, but it's hard to market.
I feel like Sonic is more ripe for fan games than something like Mario right now too, because, and I love Sonic the Hedgehog, but Mario games, there's a legacy of quality there. There's not a whole lot of what people want with Sonic games coming out. Sonic Mania was fantastic, but again, it started in the fan community. So I feel like there's a lot of people who, I understand it more with Sonic than something like Mario, because you're trying to recapture something that is no longer there. Whereas sure. Mario is just going along, having his games released to,
you get like three Mario games a year.
8.0 to 9.5 ratings out of 10, you know, it's in the bag.
We're spoiled. The Mario fans are spoiled. He's spoiled. He's spoiling us.
So,
and plus Sega is such a minute, small company compared to Nintendo in terms of money and influence. So it's like they're the people that used to do the Comic-Con thing, you know, with the hot dogs and a guy in a Sonic costume jamming out. Like that.
Oh, those were super fun.
But that's Sonic.
Yeah,
they're like the people that are cool You know the cool people show up at the party, but I can't be around them too long. But okay, that's Sonic. You know, I mean, that's the people behind it. You know, they're not in control of anything. They're not in control of anything anymore, basically. Yeah, the movie's a success because we don't care. We're just give us the money to make the movie. We don't give a shit. They didn't give a shit about the movie because they let the design be whatever the people wanted, obviously. So
it's not like they're too small to stop it, though. I mean, if they wanted
they
to
didn't
stop
care.
People, they could.
But they didn't care about the movie, though, going back to that.
Oh, no. Whatever.
You think Nintendo would have allowed that? Oh, yeah, Mario looks like a dragon in our movie. No.
Well, there is the original Super Mario Brothers movie.
Well, that's a whole other time and place. Was it 94, 93?
I'm just saying, Nintendo did it.
Well, they gave the rights to it, didn't care. But at that point, they were knee deep in, you know, battling, ready to battle Sony or get the Sony CD thing going. That was a weird time for Nintendo.
Like knee deep in the dead.
That was a weird time pre N64 for Nintendo. That's when things went awry, we'll just say. All right. So, yeah, the goal isn't to stifle everything, like you said. So, okay, it's cool, I guess. Yeah. There was that cool. We talked about that cool Sonic like 3D thing. Remember that demo a couple years ago? There's like tech demo thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool Sonic fan stuff. But so basically, just want to say so someone from Sega came out and said, "Hey, Sonic fans, I appreciate you all reaching out with concerns over fan games and monetization. So long as no profit is involved, there's usually no issue with y'all using our Blue Boy to hone your art and dev skills."
The only caveat would be is that the argument can be made if legally is that, well, if you're doing like a YouTube video showing off your stuff and making money, or you have a website showing off and you have ads, I mean, that's how Nintendo got the ROM sites destroyed.
Sure.
Partially because, oh, they're making money. They have, you know, they have all the ads are running. They're making money every month. We know about how much money they're making. That's a technical thing. But anyway, it's good, Sega. I mean, you pretty much don't have a choice, you know. But on the other side, allegedly, they went after someone. It was told to me, allegedly, they wanted to do, I won't say which console, but one of the Sega consoles, they wanted to do like a review book. And Sega was not happy with the idea of that.
Mm.
And that was something that they keep their fucking noses at, because you're allowed to do a review book. You know, you don't need someone's permission. It doesn't be authorized or licensed to do that. So, you know, so maybe they erroneously thought, you know, we can make money on this. Well, you couldn't, or you shouldn't be able to. But, you know, no company's perfect. Companies are like John Brown.
That's right.
They go a little too far sometimes, but good intentions. All right. I have good intentions at ultimatenintendo.com. I had a sale that happened on my birthday. Thanks to everyone who participated in the sale. You can get guidebooks. You can get not for resale Blu-ray, The Death of Physical Media, RBI baseball stickers. The roll is still, it's still hefty, even though I've sold some. It's still a hefty roll. Costco toilet paper roll, and the enamel pins with our cute faces. Maybe we'll get out to a convention later in the year. You can see these cute faces in person.
Maybe.
We'll see that. We'll see that. And I'll be on Twitch Wednesday night, twitch.tv/ Country Code Ian loves to show up. And
there every week with bells on.
He likes to schmooze with everyone.
That's right.
In there. He likes to kibitz. You know,
kibitz.
I've used the term all the time.
Good term.
And I'm Cameo. Cameo.com/PatContra. I can wish you a happy birthday. Instead of you guys, thanks for everyone for the well wishes, by the way, on Twitter and Facebook. You want to talk about this fucking thing?
Wish I had more to say about it. So
nothing to say about this.
I don't really have anything to say about it. We can move on. Honestly, we cover everything that falls under the purview of this topic. We can just move on.
All right, fine. Just deleted. This is an interesting article in Nintendo Life about the Maya 2000, a rare NES accessory that only works with one game.
Maya 2000 sounds like, Maya. I don't know, spreadsheet software.
or Maya the Bee that in the future.
Wait, isn't Maya? Maya is an actual, I think it's like a 3D program.
Yeah, with an A. This is M-I-Y-A. Yeah, Maya was one of the original Mia. 3D programs. Or is it Mia 2000? Okay. It's a golf simulator with a beat-up box, which is funny. And it works only with Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus's greatest 18 holes of major championship golf, which is his official name, so long as
it's
game.
Yeah.
It's the actual name. And you swing a golf. There, you can swing or do putting with it, and it somehow registers, I guess, the aim of your swing and the speed of it through this, like, it's about a 2.5 foot to 3 foot, like, block, green blocky rectangle, and you swing through it. So Yeah, when I saw this, I'm like, wow, that looks familiar. I have this with a different name, and I do. It's called the True Swing. And the box, I have to find it. It's somewhere packed up. The box looks exactly the same, just with a different name. So I think it's really funny that they probably maybe relicensed this rare peripheral out with different names. And this was probably only sold at, you know, like weird golf stores. This wouldn't be in Toys R Us.
Yeah, no, this is a very strange thing. I never knew about this until you got yours.
I found one at a convention, and I knew this existed because this is one of those things that you'd see posted once on Nintendo Age, you know, Nintendo Age ever. And I was at Gamesters One, Game On Expo, like 2000. And the last time I went there, I was 18 or 17. And it was a dealer that had all this stuff up above, like consoles. And I was like, oh, okay, there's like an N64. There's like a version board in the box. And it was sitting there. And I looked past it and I walked away. It didn't register in my mind. And then I was like, it was like one of those delay reactions. I went like, then I turned around, went back and said, how much is that? And I bought it immediately. I didn't care if it worked. Mine doesn't work, unfortunately. The LED doesn't turn on.
The display
doesn't turn on.
It's cracked, right?
It's cracked. But this thing is so incredibly rare that I was trying to find someone to even buy a replacement. I couldn't do it. I think I've heard of it being on eBay maybe twice in like 10, 15 years. Someone had it on, someone posted about it on Reddit. And I tried to message them saying, hey, I'll buy yours if you have it. And he never got back to me, unfortunately. Yeah, I'll think about it. I'm having twins right now. This was years ago.
I'm having twins. In the middle of having twins right this second.
I'm expecting twins. So I'm like, so this is a cool thing. I was gonna do an NES Punk video if mine worked. It would be cool because, you know, it's like you can use a ball, but I don't think you need a ball for it because it just, again, it's...
No, it says it does need a ball.
Oh, it does need a ball?
Yeah, it says you hit the ball.
Oh, so you need a net then. You need to buy a net, which I don't think it comes with. But yeah, you put it on the ground, you swing with the golf club. It's a cool device. I wish I could use mine. And this was just a little article. I guess they somehow knew this existed. I'm just really surprised that something this rare would have more than one name. Because I always knew it as a True Swing Golf, which is still, I think, a company, or they did other shit. I don't know. There's like True Swing Golf for like the DS, for example. It might be like a brand name, True Swing. It might be a trademark thing. I don't know. I'm very disappointed. I sent it off to our pal, Quan, to look at it. He's like, nah, it's not like a stock replacement, that like LED screen or whatever it is, LCD screen. LCD, it's LCD.
LCD, yes.
Yeah, so that's all.
Liquid crystal.
So that doesn't work. You know what else doesn't work anymore, Ian?
Apparently some copies of Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire in 3DS.
Bam!
Woo! Nailed it. Anyways, so word has been coming out that a bunch of... copies of this Pokemon game, I believe the European release specifically, a bunch of copies of it have just suddenly stopped working over the past week. There's no real reason for it other than apparently this type of memory can fail, but it's not supposed to fail for quite some time. It should be last, I think they say 20 to 35 years at least.
This is like what, 10 years less?
Yeah, 10 years from the minimum. Yeah, I mean, it's only about a 10-year-old game that should not be having these problems. So
this is a bad batch of EEPROM or whatever?
But that's the only thing I can think of. So it says, you know, the first post in this page is, you know, in our very small German video games community, physical Pokemon ORAS games have stopped working at a surprising rate. 6 known cases to us just in their group. Failure rate of about 50% that they can see. So... I've always worried about the DS and the 3DS cartridges just because they're thin and they're fragile and they're hard to clean. The teeth on the back can break easily, which makes it hard to get them back in. You can't put them in the system properly that way. But now we've got the reports of this happening. Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, I don't really know what else to say besides that. You know, there's nothing you can do to fix it. But I'm just hoping that we don't see a massive amount of 3DS game cartridge failures over the next few years.
Have you ever heard of something like this happen before with one particular game that they all went? Some of the original TAR games have like some biodegradable shit on the chip. I forget what it is, but the original run of TAR games, some of those eventually failed.
Sure.
The ones from like late 77, but that's the only thing I ever heard of where something went like due to something inside of it like that.
No, nothing
on a massive scale, or not physically massive, but at least like you knew it was a thing. We've seen my fucking chiller cart had a bad ROM because it's a shitty company, but all the other chiller carts are fine, but or a lot of them.
Yeah, never seen like a mass failure of games like this.
that wasn't a defect out the door.
Right.
Like that, like the Sonic.
Sonic Adventure on the Dreamcast, for instance. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. But we test all the Pokemon games as they come in. So far, the reports on this are that it's just the European copies. So, yeah, I would have to agree with you that perhaps it was a bad batch on the manufacturing line or something like that.
I wonder if there'd be like some sort of class action lawsuit where if it was like not like what is the guarantee on something like that, like if where it's like it's not user wear and tear, if they can say, oh, 1,000 of us, these games went, and you should replace it. Maybe Nintendo would do the right thing and just I don't know if they have a bunch of them laying around, they can send them new ones. Get the 3DS factory hasn't been closed that long. It's only been a couple of years, right? They can get them produced probably again if they had to.
Probably. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like 10 years is too short of a time.
Way too short.
Too short of a time for stuff to be failing like that. Is it really 10 years old? It's not 10 years old because the
3DS was 2011.
It's like 8 years old, I think.
So, okay.
Yeah, so that's even shorter. That's even crazier.
That's nuts.
But it definitely shouldn't be happening that quick, but it's too long, I think, for there to be any liability on Nintendo's part. I mean, what did all that limited warranty shit used to say in the back of the in the back of the NES manuals? It was like 90 days.
Was it only that much?
Yeah. Like, this card is guaranteed for 90 days against its defect.
Well, they didn't want people to think, oh, because it's dirty.
Sure.
Damn it. Just tell us to use rubbing alcohol. I can't believe it was. We were afraid of kids killing themselves. It was worth it for the greater good if a couple kids killed themselves. The rest of us were cleaning our games.
It lives a couple kids for cleaning.
I mean, come on. It was in the 80s where we didn't wear bike helmets.
We were doing we were doing way worse shit.
My sister was watching me when my parents went out when she was like 11 and I was like 7. Nowadays, you get Child Protective Services involved for that. Just remember that? Don't open the door for anyone. Okay, yeah. Bye.
Yep.
Maybe you can order pizza. Here's money to order pizza. Like, that's it. That was a regular thing as an 80s kid or Gen X to like early millennial. That was the thing. Sorry. I'm thinking like old man. Back in my day,
man,
hey, every once in a while, one of us was kidnapped off our bikes, but hey, we liked it. It did happen. Whole neighborhood was looking for me one time. I went my bike to the next town over when I was to visit Kevin.
Oh, you probably got in so much trouble.
Not really. My father for that stuff wasn't really bad about it, but the whole neighborhood was looking for me. They thought I was like kidnapped, basically. I should have just said, yeah, I'm going over to see Kevin because he has an NES.
Gonna go see Kev.
He's got Kung Fu. You know, so I'm going to go hang out with Kevin before he starts making fun of me a few years later.
What a game. What a game.
What a game.
What a game.
What else is happening?
I don't know.
Nothing?
Nah.
We're done with the podcast?
I think we're done. That's it. Going home.
There's a Nintendo calculator app that's now on the Nintendo's eShop. I think I saw it's like €8. It's just a funny thing. Because it's like, you wouldn't think about needing an app for your... like Switch, why would you ever need one?
Yeah,
because everyone's phone has a calculator on it. But I just thought it was a goofy story.
There's like clocks and stuff on there too. It's just, yeah, I mean, people make whatever. I feel like it was like, I'm going to follow this coding demo word for word, and while I'm done with it, I might as well publish it.
it's probably like a built-in unit thing. Oh, it's a calculator.
Yes. Yeah. Put a fun background on it or whatever, and call it a day. Try to get your 99 cents out of it or whatever.
Yeah, well, no, this one's eight pounds.
Oh, so it's 8 pounds.
Yeah, well, it was trending. It was not trending, but I saw someone post about that. Like, it's almost like something you do for either by accident or for attention. You know what I mean? It's like one of those weird things. So, yeah.
Does it have like a lot of features and functions? I mean, it can't be more feature rich than. I mean, does it do graphing? I mean, is it a graphing calculator?
Do people use graphing calculators in high school anymore? That stuff's not on your phone. You know, they probably have apps. They probably have graphing calculator apps. I bet you TI, those assholes that was charged, it'd be $90 for the TI 80. I bet you they still charge like 50, 60 bucks for the fucking app. I bet you they still, I bet you they do that.
I'm looking.
You know
right
how
now.
Like GPS apps used to be like $40?
Yeah.
Like 10 years when they first started out, before they were basically free. Screw you, TI. I went Hewlett Packard. I had a Hewlett Packard graphing calculator that had sound on it and space invaders.
No, I bet you they probably do still use the graphing calculators because it would prevent them from using the internet
Everything
and
else.
Cheating out. Okay. Yeah, the graphing calculator only has what
it has the functions.
Yeah. Although we used to make notes in our graphing calculators to help us.
I already told you mine had sound, right? I had a Hewlett Packard, like this really weird graphic calculator that had sound, a speaker, and I had a Space Invaders game loaded onto it. It was awesome.
I loved the graphing calculator and all the like free games and stuff that people used to pass around.
That was fantastic.
Texas Instruments calculator. Let's see.
I'm not trying to put you down, Texas Instruments. You're a very important U.S. company. But I mean, you know,
no,
computers.
No, it doesn't look like there is one by them, surprisingly. There's a lot of free ones that have in-app purchases, and I'm sure those add up pretty quick.
Some ads come in the side while you're trying to hit the like the buy button.
Yeah.
It pesters you.
Oh, surprising. Yeah, you're right. I assume there would be like a $50 app. Because the technology in those things is fucking nothing. Those calculators should be like $5 maximum.
There's no, they're not coming up with new adding and subtracting methods. It's done. That's it. We're not discovering new math functions to put in.
We're discovering new maths every day.
All right, it's all about this Dreamcast handmade portable before we spiral out of control in this weird, wacky one. So, I'll talk about it. So, someone did a 3D printed handheld Sega Dreamcast.
Ooh.
And it's for sale on the eBays. They've sold five of them and four available. This is in German? No, NL. Netherlands. It's Dutch. I will translate to English. So, four available, five sold. It's $600 US or €492, pat math. $50 shipping, expedited? I don't need expedited. But the object location, according to this, is in Hong Kong. So that's weird. It's almost like, what are you, like a middleman to sell for someone in Hong Kong?
Right.
That's weird. But it's a cute-looking little device. It has I hate the widescreen LCD on it, but, you know, I'm not sure, but hopefully you can crop it or whatever.
Yeah, if you can go 4:3 on this, I'd be much more interested in it. But it looks like a mini Dreamcast.
A mini Dreamcast with a screen on top.
With a screen on top, where the disc tray would be, there's a hole cut in, and that's where you can put a VMU.
It's built in with a VMU.
It's built in with
a VMU. It better be for $600.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a real VMU and real buttons and a thumb pad. Like they basically cannibalized probably a Dreamcast controller parts and a VMU they stuck in the middle.
The body, which I'm assuming is 3D printed,
yes.
Looks very, very nice.
Looks nice.
Yeah, the whole thing looks kind of cool. I would love to get my hands on it and just mess with it, but not at $600.
A little more sleeker than the N64 handheld.
Yeah, just a touch.
A touch. That thing was like, it's not really a handheld. It's a desktop thing. Due to high demand and on and off site through other channels, there might be delays in production. It uses a GDEMU version 5.15B, so is that an optical drive thing?
I believe it's real hardware with an optical, basically like an optical drive emulator.
I'll look up to see what that costs, because now we're getting more to the cost of that. It's a GDEMU clone 5. Optical drive cardboard on Amazon. That costs, it is an optical drive board. That costs $80. Okay, that's an $80 item. You get that. You get a VMU is like $15, whatever. That's $100. Yeah, I mean, okay. Dreamcast is like $40, $50. It's a few hundred dollars of labor and time, R&D in the screen. So you know, it's a cool thing.
Definitely neat.
It's a one person production. They're made to order. Can I get the black sports version? Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be cool. That would look nice.
That'd be nice. I got one of those in the box. Yeah. VMU built in. Every auto shell is 3D printed. Do your research first about the software. It's not going to include all the games for you. You're going to have to get that on there yourself with whatever, a flash card or whatever, flash memory. So, yeah, cool. I mean, it's cool. Well, I guess we'll start seeing reviews of these on there. Yeah, it's a very clean. I mean, you would see the marks where it's, okay, I see how it's 3D printed here and there, but it's a cleaner design for 3D printed.
Yeah, no, it is. It's surprisingly clean for 3D printed.
It's one of those ones that probably take a whole day and a half to 3D print. You know, this isn't something that's going to be quick and easy. There.
Neato.
Yeah.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
That's it for the intro. I'm feeling good, Ian.
I'm feeling all right.
I'm feeling okay. And Ian, there was an announcement by Nintendo. for an interesting program slash app that could it be a game changer?
Oh, jeez, Pat. I don't know. So Game Builder Garage is coming out from Nintendo. This was announced last week. And it is a suite of game creation software for anyone who has a Nintendo Switch to use. So this is built upon the Labo Garage. So when you use Labo, you build something in Labo, you can use it as intended, or you can go into the garage and start to tinker with it.
It has its own garage in Labo?
Yes, yes. And you can, you know, make things, basically mess around with stuff. So you can have it, when it recognizes, you know, this input or this thing happens, it will do this.
It'll be a function?
Yeah. So this kind of drags that out and makes it more focused on game design. So it's kind of like a series of if-then statements in a flow chart. So basically, you put down a block that says, with like a joystick on top, and it's that's what it looks like, and the movement, left-right. So you're like, okay, joystick, left-right. Here's this block.
This is like the dev screen, basically.
Yes. And there's a block. Mm. And then you can drag it to... you know, a block that represents a character that's on the screen.
You drag like a relationship line, basically.
Literally, yeah. Yeah. Like, you like pull a line from
this,
the block.
This means this. Yeah.
To the object that represents the player character. And mm-hmm. then, so you, and then once you do that, you pick on the player character block, move character left, right. So then you start building things up there. You can do a button object. If button is pressed, make this guy jump. And it's an easy, logical way to look at game design and be able to kind of, I don't know, lab something up pretty quickly.
I get it.
It wasn't meant to be a pun, but it ended up.
So they're taking basically the logic from the Labo programming or development and basically, okay, we're going to take this and make it the core of a new product. It's going to be basically you're making a game and not like interactive objects. So,
yes.
So I watched this trailer. And I'm like, the first thing I think to myself is like, it's first of all, it's Nintendo cute, like all like the little joystick icon has a little happy face,
yeah,
and like one of them's like grumpy little guy, you know, the button's like kind of like grumpy little, almost like a Goomba. And the first thing I think is like, if Nintendo was going to do a game design app, this is the only way they can do it. It's got to be Nintendo-fied. It's got to be cute and approachable and non-threatening. Then I thought, wow, I can't believe Nintendo has been doing games for so long. It's the first time we're seeing something like this. It's sort of like it didn't hit me that Nintendo never did something like this before or they'd have a market for this. Then you think about, well, you know, they're almost planting the seeds with Mario Maker 1 and 2.
Well, I was going to say, they've been dipping their toes in. They've got the Mario Maker. You know, they have Labo. And this seems like the next step. You can only do so much with something like Mario. They want to give people the tools to do something a little bit more. This reminds me of on the Sony side of things. Sony had the Little Big Planet series made by Media Molecule. Great series. There was three entries in Little Big Planet plus a racing game. And basically, it was a platforming game, and you played through the story mode, and you unlocked costumes and pieces that you could use to build levels, and then you went in, you could go into level creation, and you could make your 3D graphics, but 2D platforming style levels. Mm-hmm. It was essentially their Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Well, they did it first, but it was kind of like the analogy to Mario Maker. Then they
But there was different game types, right?
Well, so in the first, that's what I'm getting at. In the first three. In the first one, it was just platforming, but people found ways to do other things.
Okay.
And then as it progressed in part two and part three, they started adding more things that you could do to make different types of games. So by the time part three came out, you could do like puzzling. You could do a lot of weird shit with part three. But they finally decided that, you know what, maybe we should just open the tools up a little bit more instead of having people break and find ways to do these weird things with 2D games. Mm-hmm. We're going to make something called Dreams, which is on the PlayStation 4. And sadly underrecognized. It's a great game creation studio, simple to use, similar in ways to Game Builder Garage. So that brings me back here. Game Builder Garage is kind of like that. It's Nintendo's dreams. They finally, you got everything you could do out of Mario Maker. Now we want to break this open a little bit and let you do more.
We want to, you basically start from scratch.
Yes.
No, we're not just giving you pacing in Mario pieces. We're now, all right, well, you're going to decide what type of game you're doing.
And just from my time going around the little Big Planet games and Dreams, it's a lot of fun to just spend a night looking around and seeing what people make. These little 2 to 3 minute experiences. And very interesting things, too. I mean, I jumped from like a skydiving game in Dreams to a grocery shopping game in Dreams. Like, it's they do all sorts of strange things. And I can't wait to do that with Game Builder Garage. We haven't mentioned it yet, but this was something that really stuck out to me. Game Builder Garage is $30.
I was going to get to that. When I saw that, I was like, wow, that's... I can't remember the first time or last time Nintendo had like a budget first party title out of the gate like that, where it's like, oh, yeah, $30. It's like, we're not doing 60. People would buy it for 60. No, $30. Go for it.
They would. And
no, no, no. Nor it was that 1-2 Switch wasn't $30 and 40. That was $60. How like, yeah, not in rage it was. I was like, so, like, that's ridiculous.
That's a perfect example. 1-2 Switch should have been a $30 game.
And they would have sold a ton of them. Mm-hmm. They would have sold a ton of them. Yeah.
Game Builder Garage is the opposite. Game Builder Garage would sell at 60. The fact that it's 30 tells me that Nintendo does want this to
be a thing,
to take off.
Yeah.
That's the, like I said, what, talking about the other games. The sad thing is Dreams didn't really take off. There is a really nice community too, but I don't know if it's just the timing. They put it out at kind of in the last year of the PlayStation 4 before the PlayStation 5 came out. It had a lot of potential, but if there's not people using it and sharing games, then it fizzles out. Game Builder Garage for the Switch, which has a huge install base and a $30 price tag, I think we'll see a lot more. I think we'll see a lot more people dipping in and getting creative and trying to do stuff with this.
So Nintendo was basically fostering this throughout the years, maybe not with this being the end goal, till maybe they realize, oh, wow, we can do this ourselves. They probably looked at Roblox and was like, well, they got a community of people making stuff.
That's a good point.
And they're like, wow, they monetized that. I'm not saying Nintendo's going to do the same thing and have like different, you know, like tools for programmers that they'll charge money for or sound things, but maybe they will. Maybe they'll be, okay, you want to buy the Mario sound pack? It's $1. I'm not saying they're going to do this stuff, but like, this opens them up to monetize if they want to.
There's all sorts of avenues here for opening it up. I don't know how the graphic creation will be done. Dreams had a really interesting way of like being able to make character models and stuff. We don't know what's going to come with this.
Because you see like in this sample demo, you see a 3D game, Tuna Cube Factory. You see little like almost like a Game & Watch, little simple game. You know, you see a 2D game. You see a 3D, you know, horizontal shooter. You see like a first person shooter with a target, like a light gun sort of game. It looks like you can do anything with it. Like, this is like, this isn't just like simple stuff. It can be simple. It's like you can do some more complicated stuff as well. They show like the little text editor, a little sprite editor there. This is extremely intriguing because this could end up being to Mario Maker, but better, because you'll come up with real actual games that'll be like incredible potentially.
Well, I love Mario Maker, but the problem with Mario Maker is it all just boils down to everyone's making extremely hard levels or 10-second speedrun levels. This,
which I personally don't care about either of those. I'll care about a cool, cute little game that is inventive and fun and be like, wow, this game potentially, I'm not saying Nintendo's going to do this, maybe they'll have their own publishing portal for like the top games. They'll curate the top one. You know what I mean? Like, they can do it. I'm not saying this is a game, you know, facetiously, but like, this will get a lot of kids and adults into programming or wanting to learn about it, the same way Roblox did.
Just the logic behind it, yeah.
Learning the logic, because you don't learn a lot of this stuff. Like, that's the thing about programming, and I used to do computer science before I dropped out of it, is that there's not a lot of ways to learn about logical thinking processes, you know, outside of like programming to learn about. It's not like there's a lot of courses in grade school or high school where, oh, this is how you think logically about if-thens and if A then B. Like, that's not really a thing that gets taught, which is very important in general. I'm super down to see what happens with this over the next year.
And I keep forgetting that this comes out on June 11th. This is like less than a month away. It's a month away.
I love Nintendo. This is how you do it. You take the Fire Pro route. Hey, it's coming out next month. Here's a trailer.
Yeah, this is literally, we've said it a bunch, but this is my favorite thing about current modern day Nintendo is they announce stuff and then it releases a month.
There's no advantage to announcing this a year out.
No.
Everyone's pumped, ready to spend the money now next month on this.
Yeah, this came out and everyone was like, oh, it comes out in a month, and everyone pre-ordered it. So Nintendo, they made money.
a little spaceship shooter. You see this stuff? The little examples here? The little guy? Well, yeah, I'm not filleting Nintendo here, but I mean, this is really cool. Even if a lot of it's just like cute little like Playdate style little simple games, you know, like,
well, that's what I want out of it. That's all I ever
little
want
inventive
out of these
cute things.
I want short little experiences. That's what I like about Dreams. I like short little experiences that I can play once or twice, maybe bookmark to go back and try to get a high score. But I don't actually want.
You don't want a big
three
long game.
Hours, 10-hour games. I don't want RPGs in these. I want to see people. These are great for prototyping stuff. I want to see all the stupid ideas that maybe will never get fleshed out into a full game, but have a good idea playable right now.
I'll make the prediction right now. You're going to find a few games that end up like Untitled Goose Game.
Sure.
You're going to find games of that caliber and inventiveness and maybe that success potentially.
Lots of creative people out there, but they don't always know how to get that idea out of their head.
Or don't have the push to do it.
On paper.
Yeah, how do I make the game? Yeah, there's Unity, but this is like going to be drag and drop stuff, you know, with your finger, drag and drop stuff. You know, you can just do like that's what you want to do. Like, that's fantastic. Now, I'm looking forward to it. You have a game idea in mind you want to do, like you used to do with RPG Maker? You want to?
Oh, I'm sure I'll think of something. But I'm more into just playing. I love these things just to pick them up and play people's. Like, I haven't made anything in Dreams, but I love to sit there at night, you know, once a month, twice a month. I'll turn it on, I'll smoke a blunt, and I'll just be like, what are people doing?
Yeah, I like. We had last year for the pandemic, we actually had Animal Crossing blow up partially because of the pandemic and people were stuck. I'm not saying this is going to blow up like that did. It's almost impossible. But it won't be nothing, I think. I think this is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a hit and people are going to be talking about it. Or people will be like sharing their own creations with each other when we're back in. Oh, look at this. It's a thing where I'm like, wow, Nintendo, why didn't you think of this before? Maybe now the Switch is the proper time to do it. Yeah. All right. I want to see Ian's game. I want to see him make his little bunny characters. And that's right, your friend. All right, Ian. We've talked about WADA before. We've talked about Heritage Auctions.
We have.
Taken over the collecting landscape the past 2 years and really like 5 months, really. It's like the start of like 2019. It's like it's been like a decade. There's been lots of stuff that's made the news. Big record. Record-breaking sales of things, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3, and this other stuff, you know, Pawn Star appearances a few times of you know, these graded games, and commenting. I've commented on the articles in the past. Some are irresponsible in terms of talking about you know, is it a gold rush? The sky's the limit. Can't fail. You know, it's the Dogecoin of collecting, basically. To the moon, but games. So along the way, I said, you know, I can respect still collecting to a point. I don't totally understand it. But I did bid on some stuff now and then, Ian.
Yes.
I publicly said, I'm like, I bid on like Alien 3, I almost won. I was like the second highest bidder on a few games here and there. Nothing crazy. You know, like the beginning of, I guess it was in March, there was an auction. I don't do this every week, every 5 or 6 weeks. I'll just see what's there. And I bid on a few things. Not a huge amount of money. Then nothing happens. And then I checked an email about 3.5 weeks after one of these auctions ended. And I didn't know the auction ended, but I checked like one of my, I guess, spam emails. You know, we all have a spam email. And it said, hey, you won something and your payment's not overdue. I'm like, what? What? So I go to the site and I'm like looking around. I'm like, what? Where I bought something? What? And there was a statement to buy that I bought something. And I was already assessed a late fee because I didn't pay it within a week on top of it. Right? So I'm thinking to myself, I couldn't even remember what I had bid on that I wanted to win. That's how, like, I'll just throw out some bids and I'll see what happens. So I paid for the item with the late fee and with shipping, and then it shipped about a month later, and I got it. And you want to see what I got?
Yeah, I do.
And it's absolutely ridiculous what
Let
I got.
See what you got
with the fees, with the late fee. It was interest I paid. I paid $7.61 of interest, not a late fee.
Interest.
My invoice with it was $253.82. That included the shipping was about $20, $25 or so, and then you have the 20% fee. So I think I bid around $210 on this, something like that, and I won it. I'm almost embarrassed. What I won. It's not an NES game, and I thought I was betting an NES game. I now hold, which could be the best condition one, because I looked, Winter Games on the 2600.
Love that game, but not the 2600 version. Definitely love the PC, the Apple version of that.
1985. I remember playing this at my friends. Not in this. I played the Commodore version, Winter or Summer Games.
Sure.
So I bid on this, I think, thinking it was the NES one, because the NES one's hard to find in the box. That's always the one I'd say there was always a sealed collector couldn't find Winter Games sealed. Not that it went for only that amount of money, but I was like, okay, I'll throw a bid out. I probably threw out a bid of like $700. Thank God this wasn't bid up more, because I probably thought the NES game, I'll bid up like $700. Thank fucking God. So it's, it took about a month to arrive. It was I'll say this. This isn't a Heritage Auctions ad. It was packed better than it should have been. This is already in a protective case. This was multi.
I don't think anyone's going to mistake anything we say as an ad for Heritage Auctions.
I'll give you the facts. It was
just the facts, man.
Multi bubble wrapped, Ian. I mean, like several inches of bubble wrap in a box, and then that was put in another box. Because when it showed up, this thing showed up at my doorstep. I didn't know what package it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a 4 foot box, 3.5 foot box. I was like, what the hell is this? It was a Winter Games for the 2600. 9.4 Ian, A++ seal, 1984 black box, flip top lid, no country. So this was probably pulled from a shipping case, likely. But what's interesting about this, Ian, it also came in a baggie because some people don't want get smudge figures fingers on it. Whatever, it has the lot on this. There was also a thing. There was also a slip to make sure. Oh, make sure that everything's in the like a shipping form to make sure everything was there. But what's interesting about this case, because we have a couple of them, the game is not secure.
No,
it goes back and forth.
Yeah, that's
not good.
That's a bad.
That's not
look.
A Heritage Auctions. This is on WADA.
That's bad.
So this was then for an oversized game. Because an NES game is smaller than this.
Yes.
I guess they don't have a custom 2600 box. That's bad.
Yeah, the fact that it's not being held in there.
Let me show you.
It tells me that this isn't about preservation.
That's not good.
This is about preservation. This would not be sliding around in here.
So this is an NES game, not sealed. This when WADA first started, I guess they wanted to ingratiate with me and Ian. Ian got a DuckTales complete in box, and I was given a Golgo 13 complete in box. These are secured. They're not really moving that much.
Yeah.
In here.
Now those are in place.
These are in place with like a little plastic thing on the back, I guess, to hold it in. There's a plastic thing above it. Yeah, it slipped into a plastic piece. This does not have that. So if you compare the sizes. I just think it's funny that I was given this because I actually own this sealed. This is not a sealed copy that's WADA graded. I bought this by accident, but I could not find one that was also a 9.4 on either eBay or in Heritage Auctions itself in past auctions. So yeah, I got it, and I don't know what to do with it now. It's silly as fuck. It's silly that I got the wrong item, but it's also silly that it was also silly I was assessed a $7.61 late interest fee because I didn't pay within a week. Come on, Heritage. Come on, you're already taking 20% on top of buyer's fee, really, plus the shipping. My God. But at least it was packed well. Yeah, I'll put it out front here. It was a weird experience. I'm not happy or sad I got it. It's just like, now that I got it,
it's just a thing.
It's a encased tomb trinket. What are you looking at the thing in the back?
The rating is 2 joysticks and 1 thinker, which means that it's mostly action, but there's still a little strategy.
I should sell my Golgo 13 one here that was given to us. You still got your DuckTales one?
Yeah.
So alongside the actual game came with the little contact sheet of all their specialists.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking like modern contemporary art, jewelry, coins. And it's funny, almost every other historical manuscripts, illustration art. There's like several comics, at least several experts for each.
Mm-hmm.
For video games, it's the one person we brought before, Valerie McLeckley. That's the one specialists they have, because it shows how new it is and how, you know, they might be pulling stuff out of their butts potentially. But everything else, there's a bunch, like Americana and political stuff, Civil War, military stuff, arms and armor, tons of people. They also sent a collector's handbook of like all their major stuff to gussy you up and tell you about, oh, you know, like investment
stuff.
To gussy
you up?
Well, I mean, like selling your collection, evaluating your collection, estate planning for your collection. You know, a lot of these markets, like art and coin stuff, you got to have money. You're diversifying, really. Oh, cool. And a $17.92 copper dollar. You know what? There's no video game section in here.
Oh, wow.
You know why? It's too new. And it's not really established.
Yeah.
I was flipping through. I'm like, yeah, I see. Oh, there's Mickey Mantle's famous 52 card. You've probably even seen that Mickey Mantle card before. You know, like there's not a lot in here. You got Mickey Mantle, like rookie. You got I've seen this coin before. I've seen that Liberty coin before. You've seen that before, yeah. That picture. I don't see. Oh, Muhammad Ali's gloves when he fought and beat Sonny Liston. Yeah, that's an awesome thing to have. There's no video games in here that I can see. The first Great Gatsby is in here. Not Little Prince. Captain America, number one, punching out Hitler. I just think it's interesting that if you had a wedge of video games into here, it would be alongside like old-ass coins, you know, fine watches, and like Norman Rockwell paintings and things like that. I just think it's interesting. But they probably send it out to everyone.
Yeah.
I was on their mailing list before, even before I won this. I was on their mailing list for upcoming auctions. I didn't know how. I was like, oh, because I registered a bid and I need your address probably. That's probably how.
Sure.
But anyway, yeah, that's my story. Should I feel shame that I got this or just like?
I don't know. It's weird.
There might be. I don't know
that you should feel shame.
I was just shocked.
It's a strange thing.
I honestly, that
you did.
Like, I got a weird feeling when I saw that I won something. I didn't know what I won. I was just like, it's going to be good or weird, or because I only bid on strange shit that most people won't want, that's still like kind of weird and rare. Like that, if it was the NES one, it's like, oh, it's a rare game to find that, but no one really wants it. It's not going to be everywhere. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to bid on the shit that I know is going to go for a lot of money. So, but there was other bidders. There was other bidders on that, and I got it. So anyone out there, you know, I'll flip it, whatever. If anyone wants the best graded sealed winter games on the market, by the way, before I even paid for it, I could have sold it on Heritage Auction site. The offer to sell it was already there.
You can buy it and just put it back up, like reset, like.
So the interest thing is almost like a credit thing for having it on the store. Almost, that's the way I think they're running it. So it's almost like, Ian, I can gamble and buy an expensive game. Don't have to pay for it, and then can flip it to someone else to buy.
I see. Very weird.
See how this gets kind of murky about who's actually putting money in here?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A little Dogecoin-y, a little bit?
A little coiny.
A little crypto-ish?
A little crypto-y.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about it. It was a weird experience. I'm like happy I went through it once. The interest thing is really weird. Come on, man. That's really weird.
That is strange.
Come on, man. You know, or at least just charge me the buyer's premium that don't send until I pay the rest. Just do that. That's a little weak. The $7 was weak. Imagine if it was a game for like 20 grand, you know, it would have been hundreds of dollars pat math on it. So anyway, yeah, I won it on 3/16 and my invoice was due a week later. A week I had to pay for it. I didn't realize it. And I paid for it 2 weeks later. That's what happened. So. Yeah, so it was like a little over a month it took to get arrived. All right, well, there it is, Ian.
There it is.
Shame. You're going to be the shame lady from Game of Thrones with the bell? Shame.
Shame.
Shame. I'll put it back in here. I'll bring it to conventions. You all can look at it. Yeah, but WADA?
Yeah, bring it to convention.
But WADA? This is not secure, buddies. This is not secure at all. I don't need to get an email about it, but like, come on, man. So show some. Put some respect on these Atari games right here. So, all right. That wasn't too painful. All right, Ian.
Yes.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. We have a Patreon, Ian.
We do. It's where you go for it.
What do you get there? I got to retweet your writing.
You get, I still got to tweet it out. Do weekly writings. We do hangouts. We do, you get the full video podcast.
And you vote on a poll.
And you vote on a poll topic.
All right. In second place, at what point of price increase or life change would you definitely sell your game collection? 38%. That's not bad for a two-way split.
Not bad.
And in first place, 62%. Games you like in genres that you generally do not prefer.
So I have a couple that I could think of. One is Phantasy Star Online. I generally do not like MMO. I generally don't like online RPGs. Phantasy Star Online I like because it's not an MMO. It's more of a Diablo type game. It came out originally on the Dreamcast, and I loved playing it, but I could never get into like Ultima Online. And this is going back to how long ago it was when I really tried these. Couldn't get into Ultima Online, couldn't get into EverQuest, never tried World of Warcraft, tried Final Fantasy XI. That sort of like big online RPG genre is not something that I generally like. On that note, I did like the time that I spent with Final Fantasy XIV. I just can't. I don't want a game where I have to literally schedule it. I feel like I have to literally schedule it into my life. And I feel like that's what MMORPGs are.
I see.
But yeah. I do like Final Fantasy XIV, and I like Phantasy Star Online. But I think the one that really kind of flies in the face of what people would generally think I like and what I generally like is I'm a big fan of the two Tom Clancy's Division games. The gameplay is just fun as fuck. It's so good.
It's third person shooting.
It's third person cover based shooting, and the systems that they have in place, it's just really, really fun to play. And I don't know, it scratches some sort of itch. The gameplay loop is small and repetitive. Enter room, see enemies, cover, run from cover to cover, shoot enemies. But like, the stories I don't really care about. I'm not into like the Tom Clancy stuff. I'm not into like the espionage stuff. I'm not into the government stuff and the firearm stuff. Like, I just don't.
Rah, rah, Tom Clancy.
Yeah, I just don't get into any of that. But those games really, truly grabbed me to the point where like they made me go and try other games that I was like, maybe I can find. Remember I talked about Destiny a couple weeks ago?
You're my density.
Destiny. I wanted to play Destiny because I was like, well, it's a sci-fi theme. I like sci-fi. I can do sci-fi better than I can do this weird militia man stuff. And the game is just, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. It's just a normal first-person shooter, and it didn't grab me. So I'm desperately looking for something that plays like The Division, but isn't The Division, and I can't find it. So until I do, I guess I'll be looking forward to Division 3. What about you?
Oh, okay. A couple came to mind while you were talking. One I go back to as one of the only, I guess, JRPG type of games from the 90s era that I got into, really enjoyed the gameplay and the characters and everything, Chrono Trigger. I don't gravitate towards any of those Super Nintendo RPGs at all.
I still need to play Chrono Trigger, but everyone says it's amazing.
What?
I can't believe that. That's insane. But Chrono Trigger, the reason I like it, and I haven't played it now in like 20 years, over 20 years, is that I love the characters, I love the sense of humor stuff, I love the Super Frog, I love the time travel stuff, the music's great, I love the fact that there's branching paths to that. I got intimidated finding out there's like fucking 25 different type of endings depending on what the things you do in the game.
Yeah,
that actually kind of threw me off. I was like, oh, then, you know, but that's replayability. Not a lot of these RPGs don't have that sort of replayability,
right?
Like that. They tell
a static story and that's it. Whereas this, you can go through a bunch.
You can basically pick the people in your party. Like, you can pick up people, and the fact that it has the active time battle system. So most RPGs I don't like because you're just, all right, click a button, click a button, click a button. This, how fast you react and how you do things plays a part into it. And at the time, that was like revolutionary to include something like that. And I remember specific mechanics, but even the timing, was that Super Mario RPG that had the timing of the hits?
Yes. Paper Mario has that too, if I'm not mistaken.
I think Chrono Trigger had it, but don't kill me. I don't remember it, but the combination of the active time battle, the combos with your partners, that was a unique thing. I don't remember being like, oh, you can combo different things with different characters. I was like, oh. There's more thought put into this than just, well, I have a party of characters and they all hit people one at a time.
Sure.
there was something that made you think a little bit more using some strategy more so than in a regular RPG. I really like that. I love the graphic style of the game. And that's, but ask me, hey, Pat, how many other sort of RPGs like that have you played in your life? I was like, not a lot of them. And maybe I'd enjoyed them, but I'm not drawn to them. I'm not saying I hate that genre either, but it's like, they're so samey to me after a while. It's like, how much more can you get out of it? Now you're just basically swapping out characters and stories.
Right.
So Chrono Trigger to me is a big one. I thought of another one. I do not dislike racing games in general, but there's certain types of racing games I never got into. Like, I never really got into Need for Speed. I had one on the PC I didn't really like. I think I got Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. It was like number 3 or whatever. Okay. But I always bring up a game that I never thought about. I really don't necessarily like games like this. I love Midnight Club. And that's not a type of arcade racing style. It's not really an arcade race because it's more open. It's an open game. I like regular, like, you know, like Cruising USA. This is a totally different type of game genre, though, versus like Cruising USA. I really enjoyed that game. Then I thought, I also love Driver. So do I really like the certain environments of an open driving game like that? But Midnight Club is not Driver. They're both driving and racing, but they're different games. So I thought about that. I can't think of another game like Midnight Club I've ever gotten into like that, where they have like Capture the Flag and Tag, like, and it's just goofy, like well-designed, very awesome, like in between arcade and sim race mechanics. You know, you still have to be able to drift and handbrake and things like that. But it's very accessible, very easy to get into, but it can be very competitive and fun. And that was another one I thought of, like the 3D arcade but open racing game is not something, it's not a genre I dislike, it's just not something
that you would normally grab.
Because there's tons of games they make like that, especially in the modern era. I'm like, I don't need to play any of them.
Right.
You know? I'd never go back to them. I like shooter, I don't gravitate towards shooters necessarily, but I do think about, I like the shooter genre a lot more than JRPG genre. And like this open arcade racing genre, you want to call it that, you know. Those are ones that came to mind immediately.
The Midnight Club series has been, it's always popular, always in demand. People are always looking for part 3.
Well, they've had more than 3, right? They've had like different...
The last one they did was Midnight Club LA.
That was the last one?
That was PS3 and 360. They didn't do one during the PS4 era.
They did Street Racing, they did... Midnight Club, Midnight Club 2. Okay, come on, Rockstar. You got other properties. Come on. Give us a Midnight Club. Anyway, those are ones. Then I thought about puzzle games. Puzzle games is a weird one because a puzzle game is almost like each puzzle game is its own mini genre. They're like, they're different how they
act. You have your larger... It's like the anime, the kingdoms, the genus, and the, whatever. You know what I'm
Kingdom
trying to say.
Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, yes. Species. How do I remember that? There That's the order. So yeah, it's a different genus. Yeah. But like, I love Dr. Mario. I don't dislike Tetris, but I love playing Dr. Mario more than I like playing Tetris. Yeah, I just.
Tetris is my least favorite of the major puzzle games because I'm bad at it. 100% because I'm bad at it. But I really like Puyo Puyo. The Dr. Mario style has always been a lot of fun.
I love, which is
very similar to.
I love Puzzle Bobble. It's like puzzle and action, but I love Puzzle Bobble.
Yeah, that's more like speed. I mean, it's puzzle, but there's
not really puzzle.
I love that game too.
But yeah, and then I thought of one genre. You know,
Pat's coming correct with the answers today.
Don't I not usually, Ian? Come on, give me some credit here. I'm on that caramel ice cream cake, crunchy high. it is a genre that's fallen out of favor since like the 70s and early 80s. What's the proper term? Brick and ball, or if you want to say, or paddle and ball. I think it's a proper paddle and ball is the genre.
Breakout style.
Exactly, but you can't use that.
Yes.
So that's not a genre I want to play, but I always play Arkanoid.
I actually really like that genre of games, but you have to have a spinner. Got to have a spinner.
I don't. You know, okay, maybe I do.
Or some sort of analog.
We had a DOS game that was a paddle and ball, like a breakout clone that I can't remember now what it was, but wow, I just remember that. It had the different sounds in the PC speaker. Look up like DOS breakout game, like 1985 or 84. And see what comes out. I just remember that. But anyway, but that's not a genre that if you throw those games in front of me, I'm not going to play those. But Arkanoid is like the peak of the peak of the whole experience. Back in, what was that, 86 or so, something like that. Video game years.
Warlords is a great variation.
Yes, maybe I like the genre. Maybe it's just hard to make a good game. That's different.
I think the game has to be fairly fine tuned, but it's a great game. It's a good genre.
I went a bridge too far, Ian. Yeah. I'm not as good as you think. I went a bridge too far on this one. So I'm sorry, paddle and ball genre. One of the original video game, the OG game genre,
yes.
Paddle and ball, or they used to, electronic tennis.
That's electronic tennis.
You
yes.
hit a ball off a little line before it was Pong.
Circus Atari is really fun too.
Okay, I'm wrong. Sorry. Is there any ones? It would be too easy. I was gonna say Guitar Hero. No, I don't like any of those games though. So I don't like any of those. Yeah.
All right.
Is that it for that? That wasn't bad.
That's it.
Ian and other fellas out there, great news. If you care about male grooming and looking good, this is the news you've been waiting for. The Manscaped engineering team has created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, which is now available for purchase in the USA and Canada. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com.
Craftsmanship and the details on the 4.0 are next level. Their advanced ceramic blade and skin-safe technology ensures your tenderest areas are as safe as possible. What makes this trimmer different than all the other trimmers? Is a new multifunction on-off switch to engage a travel lock. Take it with you anywhere. Don't worry about it turning on. Lawnmower 4.0 gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. The new trimmer even allows you to customize your trim all over through additional guard lengths with sizes 1 through 4.
Do some shapes and designs. Go for it.
And looks-wise, it's sleek with a two-tone matte and gloss finish. Even features a hot foil-stamped black chrome Manscaped logo.
Woo!
Woo! Show that mower off loud and proud. The Optimized Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is waterproof, so you can groom in the shower and not have to worry about making a mess on the floor. And the Lawnmower 4.0 has new wireless charging. Uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer.
If you're still using your razor to trim both your face and your balls, what is this, the 1800s? It's time to make changes. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using code CUPODCAST. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. We have, Ian, a voice call-in system.
Oh, good.
It's on a telephone. We don't have a producer. We can do a live call-in system if we had a producer to screen calls. We don't have that, unfortunately.
No, we don't.
We get someone in a glass booth behind there. Someone look up facts for us, So you go to anchor.fm/CUPODCAST, and you could leave a short message or question about something, and if we like it, we're not legally obligated to answer all of them. We'll take you on. First one here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Mason from small town Orangefield, Texas. Big fucking fan. I hope I can swear in these.
Too late.
I just wanted to know if you guys had any plans for, collections or things you've amassed in your life for whenever you pass away, as morbid as that is. Are you wanting to have children that you can leave everything to? Or do you have plans set up? If you need an heir, I'm happy to do it. again, big fan.
We've gotten a rash of questions like this lately. It's like the fourth or fifth time. We're either having kids, what happens when you die, what are people going to do when people get your games or die, something weird happening, or people are over concerned about our health.
Look at us. They see that we're getting dusty and old.
Getting dusty?
Getting dusty and old.
Well, you'll be in your 40s, what, next year?
Maybe 40? I'll be 39 this year, 40 next year.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Hey, Ian, and also hey, Pat.
Oh, hey.
I'm a person, and I've been thinking a lot about batteries. Do soldered on or rechargeable batteries affect which game cartridges or hardware you collect? Do you think we'll be able to find a replacement battery for the Wii U gamepad or the Game Boy Micro 15 years from now? Or are we just going to have to give them a tail and plug it into some other power source? Thanks for the thoughts.
That was a very, game show type of a voiceover style.
Person's got a future.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Very almost Rod Roddy-esque. All yes. Right. Does that affect you at all?
No, it doesn't. Not really. So far all of those batteries have been able to be, replaced and soldered. There are companies out there that make socketed I guess that's maybe the right word.
The socketed
replacements
batteries.
Where you can solder them in and then you can just literally slide a battery in and out when it goes bad. We still have Game Boy Advance SP batteries that are being manufactured today. Those are 15 years old. There's a place for it. Specifically the Wii U. Interesting, because the Wii U wasn't, you know, popular. Sold like shit.
Sold like shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's at some point we'll get to where we can't get batteries for these anymore, but I don't think it's going to be in 15, 20 years. I think we're thinking like 100 years from now. There's always companies. Video games are popular. There are companies out here that exist specifically to make sure those things are still in production.
The only thing that has not been reproduced, even like arcade parts are being reproduced and remade. CRT is the only thing. CRT, no one's cranking out the CRTs, I think, anymore. That's a little bit more cumbersome, I think.
Sure.
That's about it. There has to be a solution long term for that, for like arcades. I hear they are coming up with like a way to make an LCD look like a CRT or something. There's a way to do it, I think, but you know, they'll figure that out. That's really the big thing is CRTs. When those go, like, it's hard to get replacements.
Yeah.
For those. Let's see, like, there's a bunch laying around somewhere. All right, next. Thanks for the question. Thanks for the question. That's how you would say it.
Hey guys, Jeff Dickinson here from Dallas, Texas.
Hey Jeff.
This question is to Ian, but Patrick, I'd like to have your input. Do you think physical media in the future will disappear? I'm old school. I love putting that CD into my Sony Discman, throwing those headphones on, or even putting that record on, still the headphones, or even putting that Laserdisc movie inside my Pioneer player and watching that way. I know things are going digital, but is there still a collector value? Do you guys see in the future for this kind of stuff? For me, I still rock it and still love it. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Jeff, time marches on. Will there be it depends upon the market and it depends upon specifically what it is, but overall, most of it will be junked. I mean, historically, it's going to be junked. That's just what it comes down to.
I think there's always going to be some form of physical media for various things. People will find ways to do it. But no, we are moving quickly towards digital, you know, a digital future. I don't know that I'll ever see that full transition. But I was thinking about it last night, and I don't know why.
You don't think you're going to see the full transition? It's already here.
Well, I'm saying people abandon it entirely.
Well, we're going to be gray, but like I said, the Zoomers don't care about physical media. Children are our future.
I think there's always going to be collectors, but I don't think that physical media will necessarily always exist.
But once the people that grew up with it die off, you'll be left with weirdos that are like, well, this is how people used to play Tiffany on a cassette.
I'm not saying there's going to be wide adoption. I'm just saying that it will still be around.
But for a sustainable collectible market, you need a decent amount of people, or else it falls into you know, the model train territory.
I think you need to be more specific. Sure. Movies, physical media. Games, physical media. That's all going to have different shelf lives, I think.
Movies is done. Yes. I mean, the only reason things is worth money now is because they haven't reprinted this stuff or it's not available for streaming. It's like all the old movies Frank likes. You're competing with other, you know, other boomers that want the old movies that are hard to get.
Right.
Like same with some of the CDs too. But then again, a lot of them is like, well, like he doesn't realize he can probably get them streaming, but so he just likes the CDs.
Sure.
He still likes doing, like he said, like putting the CD in, you know. But Frank never went back to vinyl.
Hey guys, this is Aaron from the Hungry Trilobite podcast. I have a question about your coverage of the Toys R Us closing and the subsequent efforts to revamp it. Why do you think another company hasn't tried to slip into the void in the meantime and open up a similar store? Seems like it would have been the logical thing to do. Thanks.
Because retail is very difficult even before the pandemic in terms of getting into it, having a footprint and getting the marketing out. So you can maybe survive as like a one-off. There's still probably one-off toy stores here and there. I don't know about one locally here. You know, but we always grew up with it would be like a one-off toy store, you know, that would carry some of the stuff, but they would carry some like G.I. Joe stuff and like My Little Pony, but it was mostly the weirder stuff.
It was mostly Playmobil. I had a place in Buffalo called Clayton's that sort of place. I think the timing of the pandemic made it difficult. I feel like if we hadn't lost that entire year, you might have seen something try.
Well, but Toys R Us had the few pop-up shops before in New Jersey, but before the pandemic.
What I think is most likely to happen is that you're going to see smaller stores that specialize more there's going to be more focus. You're going to get your game stores, your video game stores, your board game stores, which we already have.
You think we might get like action figure
I think that's something we're going to see. I think we're going to see a figure store. And I don't think that's going to be able to be doable in all, you know, everywhere in the U.S. But I think there is enough of a market, because when you see a lot of people our age talk about, you know, they lament the absence of toy stores, it's because a lot of them are figure collectors and they don't have anywhere to go now except for like Target.
Nor to take their kids.
I think there is probably a market for a small, independent figure store. In comic shops do that to a certain degree. Like Vani does carry certain figures, but I think you need something larger. The problem is I don't think the distribution methods for those companies are made with small stores in mind.
No.
There's a reason why you don't see the newest Mattel toys in other places. You didn't see them in other places besides Toys R Us or KB. It's because I think they needed to order in such a quantity.
They also got a lot of exclusives. KB's have exclusive like X-Men figures. It was like, oh, this is the Weapon X version of the Wolverine figure. Toys R Us would have exclusive versions of stuff. A one-off can't do that. They also don't have the buying power that like a Target has or a Walmart. And I'm more thinking about a Toys R Us environment for a child, and that's really what the biggest loss is. Because when you go into a Target, you get like 3-4 aisles of toys, yeah, but you're not getting the variety that you got in Toys R Us. You're not getting the weird stuff to have a chance. It's limited shelf space of stuff that they know Target knows we're going to put out stuff that's going to sell. So it's only going to be Marvel. It's only going to be Star Wars. No weird shit anymore. You won't get Mask in 2020. You won't get like the weird shit unless there's a property attached. Well, Mask had a property. You know what I'm saying? You won't get the weird stuff like Air Raiders. That's a good one. Air Raiders was a cool toy in the 80s that was around for like a year.
Yeah.
That would never get a chance nowadays to be a major toy. It would never get a chance to have commercials. And you know what I mean? Like, I watch all these 80s commercials. There's all these toys that are like, wow, that's weird and strange. You don't see that stuff probably anymore being pushed as much because you don't have a Toys R Us. You don't have a Kitty City. You don't have a child's world slash, you know, Child Pals. You don't.
Right.
You know, the space. It's a shame. All right. Next here from this fellow.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Andrew from New York. Pat, I watched Flea Market Madness since the beginning. Ian, I watched you since the beginning. On with Pat. My question is, if an alien race came down to Earth, what three games would you give him if he wanted to know what video games were?
That's actually a great question. That was going to be a full topic.
Doom 2, Super Mario Brothers.
Doom 2?
Yeah. Okay. Why not?
Well, you'd scare him because we're shooting aliens. I wouldn't like that.
I mean, I think we're going to understand that it's video games. But I'm not worried about scaring him. Doom 2, Super Mario Brothers, Pac-Man.
Okay, I was with you, Pac-Man. I think you have to go simple first, not to scare him. Do you want to scare them? We don't know how, or if they're like, are they microbes? Are they like little blobby guys? Are they like, have, you know what I mean? Yeah, Pac-Man's up there.
I mean, you might want to throw something more modern there. Throw a Halo in there or something.
Don't shoot the aliens. You want to start a war. That's come on. Bad. Can't it be you as president?
It's probably bad.
Be like Mars Attacks. I think it's interesting that they're basically been softening us the past couple of years, the public, to basically announce that aliens exist. Like we're getting to that point with our government. If you'd notice, they're like, oh yeah, we don't know what this stuff was officially from the Pentagon. Like they're softening us. I'm not saying there's going to be a major announcement, but they're softening us for something that's happening. They are. You haven't seen all the stuff come out?
Yes, I have.
And other countries have already said in the past, oh yeah, there's stuff. And so the U.S. is like one of the last major ones holding on and saying, oh, we're afraid of telling the people. There's so much bad shit that's happened. How can it get worse that alien? What, they're going to blow up the planet? Come and do it. Put us out of our misery. Great. All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Pat from Boston.
Hey.
Longtime listener, first-time caller. The show rocks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I've got a question primarily for Ian, but I know both of you have discussed this in the past.
It's always for Ian.
It's breakfast food. Yes. I'm a big breakfast sandwich lover.
Yes.
However, oddly, I've never gotten into omelets. So I'm curious, what are some ingredients that you would throw into an omelet, perhaps that are unique or not thought of, that would kick it into high gear and make somebody who's never really been passionate about them fall in love with them?
Come on, Pat. I call you Pat, Patrick. You're in Boston. There's tons of diners. You go to any nice diner, they'll have like 15 different omelet options. You start from there. You got like the Western omelet. You got like some with like bacon in it with like Swiss cheese. You got the veggie omelet. My mouth's not where. You get like you can do one like broccoli and sliced up tomatoes in there. An omelet's like the omelet's like choose your own breakfast adventure. That's why I love omelets. You can do whatever you want. You put olives in there if you want. Feta cheese.
Two of my favorite.
It's fantastic omelet. Omelet's great.
Two of my favorite omelet ingredients since this question was directed at me, Patrick.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, bye. I'm done. All right,
bye, everyone. Would be mushroom and avocado. Not necessarily at the same time, but they're very, very good omelet fillings. Avocado in omelet was not something I had had until I came out to San Diego.
On top?
No,
in.
Right before they roll it
right
up.
Right before they roll it up.
Yeah.
Not guac. You're saying
slice avocado. It's creamy. It's delicious. It's easily one of my favorite things that I've started putting in omelets. And I wanted to say,
gummy bears.
Mentioned breakfast sandwiches. I have really been working on some great. I've been trying to perfect the simple egg and cheese breakfast sandwich. It's my favorite. I've come to the conclusion that when it comes to breakfast sandwiches, egg and cheese is basically all I need. Bacon,
I like a meat, fine.
But no, I love the simplicity of a basic egg and cheese.
What do you put on a piece of toast? Like, what do you put a toast?
So I've been using nice wheat rolls. I've been using nice called. They're it's like a Mexican roll.
How about a ciabatta bread?
I don't like ciabatta bread.
Really?
It's everything just shoots out the fucking back. But I've been cutting it and then buttering it and then grilling them real nice and toasty in the cast iron crispy. Pan so they get that crispy, crunchy, salty, buttery layer. Ooh. And then I've been mixing a spicy mayo with sriracha.
Ian, what are you doing, buddy?
And mayo.
You got to make
spread that on.
You need a food truck, Ian. That's your
two destiny. Scrambled eggs, cheddar cheese.
Ian's food truck. Ian's food truck. That's your future.
Amazing. God, it should.
Quit the podcast. Quit Luna. Ian's food truck.
Quit everything. I'm just going to live in the truck.
The food truck life actually sounds really appealing. You converse with people. You make some money.
Doesn't sound bad.
Not a lot of overhead. Yes, you need your permits, your health permits, but you don't own a restaurant. It's a fucking truck.
Got to rent a kitchen.
What's that?
You usually got to rent a kitchen to do prep work and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't do the prep work yourself?
I mean, you rent kitchen space to do the prep work. So you can have a stove in front of you and big counters. You prep everything and then you get everything together in the truck and you finish it in the truck on the
go. So where do you go then to do the prep?
You find like community kitchens that you can rent out.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a lot of money.
No, I mean, it can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Then you get the helper to help. You throw them a few bucks. It's fantastic. Yeah, I see that in your future. You'll be semi-retired. Fuck the podcast. Go make food. That's your dream. That's your passion.
That's what I should be doing.
See? Do four or five more. We got time. This is a shorter podcast so far. I just had it in front of me and I lost it.
Hey guys, it's Andrew of Ukraine. So Ian, I have a question to you. Since you have started telling us stories from the game stores, did any person from those stories reached out to you and said like, yo, what the heck, why are you telling crap about us on that internet radio or whatever you do? So did it happen? Somebody was angry with stories or whatever? Thank you. Bye.
No one has come and spoken to me about being discussed on the podcast or in a Tales from the Game Store. That said, it's one of the, there are two main reasons why I don't do them anymore. One, the attention is not worth it at work. And two, I don't want to run into that situation. As the podcast gets bigger and bigger, the likelihood of people knowing that it's not like it's massive, but the more time goes on, the more likely it is that someone will know that I do the podcast. And I don't want to get to that situation where I speak about someone and someone comes back and says something.
Man, you talked about me. My balls hanging out of my...
God damn it.
My shorts.
Yeah.
Out of my... What was it? Basketball shorts?
Wearing basketball shorts.
That's a good one.
I think he just meant to adjust his shorts, but he adjusted both.
Buenos aires, Uncle Pat and Uncle Ian. J-Bo here again.
Oh, hi.
L-O-N-D-O-N. So, another quick question.
Oh, from the UK?
Well, not even a question, a rant.
He's called before.
I've had enough of the disrespect for the Game Gear.
What?
That was my favorite handheld growing up, Pat. That's enough. All I want to know is, what was you guys' most played handheld and game 2? Mine was probably Sega Game Gear, Mortal Kombat 1 and 2, and then Game Boy Color, Pokemon Yellow. What's yours, lads? Let's go. Keep it up.
Hey, J-Bo, I don't remember ever trashing the Game Gear ever. I'm feeling very threatened. Have I trashed the Game Gear?
You probably have.
I probably just said it's a Master System. It got retreads on it. That's basically what I probably said.
My buddy, you know? Rick has been getting into the Game Gear lately, and his response to me is, I can recommend the games on the Game Gear. He's like, there's a lot of good games on the Game Gear. I can't recommend the Game Gear system.
Yes, that's probably what I said. The hardware itself is trash. The actual, not the platform, the hardware, that piece.
Sure.
That blocky piece of garbage with a bad screen and eating batteries, that's not good. Maybe that's what you thought. That's probably what you meant.
In terms of games that my favorite handhelds, the original Game Boy and the Neo Geo Pocket Color. On the original Game Boy, I don't think there's a game I've played more than Kirby's Pinball Land. And on the Neo Geo Pocket Color, I played a considerable amount of Bust a Move Puzzle Bobble on that thing in high school, my last year of high school.
Oh, nice.
And one of the exchange students, my friend John, actually my co-host on Extra Napkins, got one, and there was an exchange student from China who was really into them, so he actually went out and bought one and got the link cable, and we would play in homeroom and at lunch.
Nice. All right, next here.
Hey, Matt and Ben, I'm just curious, do you guys follow any other YouTube channels not gaming related?
What do you think, Ben?
You say Matt and Ben? That's what I thought. Yeah. No, not really. Well, lately, I've been using YouTube a lot more. What I do at night is I get high, and then I grab my crochet, and I put my Switch in the dock, and I load up YouTube, and I watch first-person view journeys of subway routes and trains.
Wait, what? People go on trains?
Conductors will, people who are driving it will take video of basically a first-person view of what it looks like from when they're sitting in the seat. And I've watched trains through Helsinki, subways through New York. They're anywhere from like half an hour to some are like 4 to 8 hours long.
We all want to be a conductor when we were a kid on a train. Choo-choo.
I love trains. The relaxing, just the sound. Honestly, most of the time, most of the time I turn those videos on, and when I'm crocheting, I'm looking at my hands, but the sound is very relaxing to me at night.
I wish we had a better train system in the U.S.
So do I, and we'll never get it. We missed that opportunity.
I don't know if we missed it, but I mean, like...
No one's going to put the money into it now.
It's because you can't get money out of it easily.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
No, we would need an extraordinarily altruistic person to just dump money into it.
Well, the government can make it a project, but like, yeah, super high-speed rail that you can go across, you know, states in like, you know, a couple hours.
Yeah.
You know, that would be fantastic. That'd be great. Oh, well. Let's see a few more here. Jonathan.
Ian, Pat, this is Jonathan from Denver. You might remember me as the guy who said he wanted to feed Ian and fight Pat. And for the record, I'll do either. As long as you guys are down, I'll feed or fight both of you. But
okay, Ian, real quick, could we take Jonathan both 2-on-1?
Probably not. I'm not
just
a fighter.
Just grab his legs. That's all. We got outside chain. Just grab his legs and hold on.
My neck has been moving around a lot lately.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. A little concerned that I'll throw something out.
Sorry.
But I'll take the food.
Hype train's derailing, and I wanted to hear what video game hype you guys got caught up in, and what was the outcome? How hard did it crash, or how high did it live up to expectations? I figured you guys could get into that. It sounds like a pretty cool conversation. Keep up the good work, man. I love every week.
Hey, thanks, John.
Again, later.
Pumping up your own question there, John. I like the confidence. Yeah, but it'd be cool if you guys talked about it.
I think that would be fun if I had a little bit more time to think about it. However, I rarely fall victim to hype. I've been good about that even since I was younger. That's just one thing that I've kind of tried to avoid. However, it was impossible coming off of Final Fantasy VII not to be hyped up for Final Fantasy VIII if you were playing video games, especially like I was in high school at that time when it came out. And I remember playing Final Fantasy VIII and just waiting for that feeling to grab me, like Final Fantasy VII did. And I don't think Final Fantasy VII is the greatest game ever, but I think what I failed to realize was that Final Fantasy VII was so... A lot of people remember Final Fantasy VII fondly because of the transition that it represented. The transition from sprite-based graphics to 3D graphics. The transition into the FMV era of video games with cinematic cutscenes and things like that. And you can only... That magic trick can only be done once before you've seen it. So Final Fantasy VIII was a big letdown to me. And I know that recently there's been a lot of kind of... revisionist, well, maybe it is a good game, and it's not awful, but it wasn't a great game to begin with. But that's the big one for me. I remember getting Final Fantasy VIII and just it didn't grab me the way I was expecting it to. In terms of something that really lived up to the expectations, unfortunately, I'd have to think about that more.
Sure. So two more.
Hey guys, this is Paul from Raleigh NC again. Look, we all know about the amazing ALF game for the Sega Master System. But what 80s sitcom do you wish had been made into a video game? Personally, I would have loved a Golden Girls point-and-click adventure game.
Well, Golden Girls worked more as a point-and-click? Or like, could you do a platformer with that? No.
No.
Couldn't do a platformer? Well, they had a Married Children game, and they were thinking about doing one on the NES. And looking back, I'm like, well, it's probably a good idea they didn't do that. That'd be very hard to translate that over, that humor. I'm guessing that'd be almost, that could have been a point-and-click. I'm guessing.
All of those games would have worked best as point and clicks because they're all story based. That's none true. Of those games are, none of those shows would be like particularly great for action games.
Well, Al's bar fights were the funniest thing we ever got in a fist fight. Like the Ed O'Neill's like humor with the fight, like he could actually throw a punch because he actually knew how to fight or knows how to fight in real life. But it was funny as hell seeing him get beat up in the bars and stuff. But I'm trying to think about something. Another sitcom that would have been good. Is there any that are action based that would have been good?
I was just about to be like Knight Rider, but they made it.
They made that. And yeah. I mean, that's not a sitcom, though. It's just an action thing.
I don't know. Give me...
Silver Spoons RPG? I don't know.
Give me Perfect Strangers. Belky's got to rescue Larry.
Remember that site they had with the Flash game? They took it down like a few days afterwards.
No.
It wasn't licensed. It was to promote the DVD coming out. We're talking like this is 10
oh, my God. No, I had no idea.
Yeah, it was a Flash game where it was basically like rhythm-based with it standing tall. But it was like a 3D third-person thing on like a rainbow or something. You never saw that?
No.
All right, you can pull it up. One more question here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Chris here from Rhode Island. Pat, I had the pleasure of meeting you at the last PAX East.
Yeah.
We had a conversation about the parallels of the Italian food in Rhode Island and Jersey.
Oh.
Last week you mentioned Zeppelis. Up here we call them Zeppelis. And if you call them Zeppelis, we make fun of you. Anyway, my question...
Okay, Chris. Let me stop it for a second. I know it's called Zeppelis. I know it's prosciutto. I know it's mozzarella. But the problem is, if I say that on the podcast, no one will know what the hell we're talking about. That's inside language for us Ginzans, right? If I say this stuff, you could even Google it. It's basically, when you say this stuff, it's like a poor Italian dialect.
Sure.
And Sicilian. When you say like schiadelle, like that's nothing how it's spelled. Nothing how these words are spelled. You know, the Italian dessert. Like pastry. Chris, it's for everyone else, Chris. That's what it is. Okay? Next.
Anyway, my question, Sword of Sodan for the Sega Genesis is a horrible game.
Yes.
But I still love it for my own reasons.
Me too.
So I'm just curious, what are some of the worst games love for whatever reason? Okay, thanks. Bye.
All right, Chris, redeem yourself. Sword of Sodan is a bad game that I love.
Really? I've never played that one.
And I loved it on the computer. I saw it on the in a computer shop in like 87, like probably like an Egghead software. I was like, look at this. Oh, there's blood. You see blood when you hack the people and stuff. And then it was translated to the Genesis. It's the clumsiest, trying to be edgy, like, you know, you're a warrior, female warrior. Yeah, you never heard of that game before?
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
It's one of those games that once you see it, like, wow, this came out?
Yeah.
It's like, it's violent. You get the gameplay itself is horrendous, how you move and like, but it's very violent, like the themes of it, like you have like executioners with axes and stuff. It was like probably came out like 88 on the PC, 87, and it came out in Genesis probably 90, 91. It was like, you know, EA published it. Is there any ones like that appeal to you like that are horrible, don't say Wally Bear.
Wally Bear.
All right, that's it. We're done.
We're done.
We're fucking done.
That's the end of the podcast. All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks for the Zeppelies, Chris. All right, that's it for the podcast. This was a fun one.
It was. It
wasn't too long.
It was good.
It was fine. I'm fucking hungry. I haven't been fasting. Damn it. I need ice. I forgot to talk about my ice maker, how appliances hate me.
Save it for next week.
Appliances hate me.
We'll see what happens.
I better have ice by the next week. I got to be like a, you know, what is it? Be a caveman and buy like trays? Where do I buy trays? I went to the dollar store and they didn't have any. Oh, dollar store didn't have any food at all. I went to the dollar store. I couldn't buy my dollar store gherkins.
Wow.
I was very upset. I asked the person, like, where's the food? Like, oh, the truck didn't come in. I'm looking, I'm like,
the truck didn't come in?
They're really wiped clean.
You wanted your gherks.
No, but nothing. They had nothing, though. So it wasn't like the truck didn't come in. Well, the truck didn't come in for 3 months. It was cleared out. There was like two things of tortillas, and that was it. So something was happening with that. I mean, come on. They have a thousand little bacon bit things. They weren't all bought the past week.
True.
So I was like, something's happened. Like, it was almost like it got shut down by the health department.
I was wondering. I mean, that's
like,
the only thing I could
think
of.
I'm not saying it happened to my local Dollar Tree, but like, it was something weird like that. I mean, not even like, no candy either. It was like, nothing was there. I was like, something's happening here.
That's strange.
Something's happening.
Yeah, maybe they had to clear out the pantry.
Come on.
Straight from scratch.
I was like, oh, I'm going to see if I can finally find peanut. You know, I haven't had a peanut butter Twix since I was a kid, basically. Oh, let's look for the peanut butter Twix.
I brought you that one, like, last year after you said you hadn't had peanut butter Twix. I brought you one.
You did? A full package?
Yeah, I brought you a peanut butter Twix.
A full package?
Yes.
Not a mini?
No. Brought you a full one about a year ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago. But okay. Because they're everywhere. But you always say you never see them. But they're literally everywhere. So I grabbed you one.
Well, they don't have them in the Halloween. They don't do that.
They don't have like the fun sizes. No.
But even on the commercials, in the 80s commercials I've been watching, twitch.tv/countrycode, they would like promote the caramel first. And they'll throw like a picture of the peanut butter one on the side. Like, oh, we have this shit as well. They never had it primary. It was never the primary Twix. All right, we're done.
We're done.
We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone, for the birthday wishes.
1 week.
What's 1 week?
When we're back.
Yes, maybe.